Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can have you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Good evening and welcome to African Voices platform on Sheffield Live TV and radio. My name is Chiwe Chihana, your host today. The Festival of Debate, which is an annual festival of politics here in Sheffield, is back this year beginning the 16th of April. And one of the events that we would like to talk to you about is focused on HIV and AIDS. So the event, How to End New Cases of HIV by 2030, is going to be hosted by Millennium Galleries on the 18th of April from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And our guest today will be speaking about that event, and then we'll also speak a bit more about HIV and AIDS in a wider context. So without further ado, our guests are Ashley Callagher from Millennium Galleries, who are currently hosting an exhibition that's related to the event, as well as just the HIV and AIDS. And also I've got Winnie Seruma, who is a speaker at the event that's going to be held on the 18th of April, who will speak a bit more about HIV AIDS and what they'll talk about at the event. So good afternoon, actually, Winnie and Ashley. Welcome to African Voices platform.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much. Winnie, perhaps I could start with you. Could you tell us a bit more about who you are and what you do?
I am based in London and I am a freelance consultant. And my work really focuses on health trainings, supporting organizations, supporting people living with HIV, and a whole range of different other issues. I'm also a recent co-author of a book titled Our Stories Told by Us, which really celebrates the African contribution to the UK HIV response. And I'm also a person living with HIV, and I've lived with HIV for 36 years.
Thank you so much, Winnie. And Ashley, could you tell us a bit about yourself and also the event that's being hosted as part of the Festival of Debate?
Yeah, so my name is Ashley Gallant. I'm the curator of the Ruskin Gallery and the Ruskin Collection at Sheffield Museums, which is a teaching collection set up by John Ruskin, who was a Victorian critic and teacher, to inspire the people of Sheffield. And one of the things we try and do with this collection is try and make it relevant to ideas and politics today and to our communities in Sheffield. So as part of an exhibition we have on, we're showing two panels from the AIDS Memorial Trust quilt. And off the back of that, we're working with the Terence Higgins Trust and Festival Debate to do a talk around the goal of ending HIV transmission by 2030. So it's really exciting for us to take something which is based in kind of Victorian art and kind of jump out from that into something which is relevant to our communities today and get experts in to have these discussions and do something which can have an impact in the world. Sorry.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Ashley. And then with the exhibition that's currently on and has been going on for a while, when did it start and when does it end?
So the exhibition started in December. It runs until December 2024, and we're showing two of the quilts. So we have panel 21 of the AIDS Memorial Quilt, which specifically has a panel dedicated to Rodney Dunn, who's from South Yorkshire. So there's a nice local connection, and that will be on display until December. And at the moment, we also have the Terence Higgins Memorial Quilt, which will be leaving and going back to London after the talk. So it'll be going on April 18th. Kind of a
Brilliant, thank
celebration of us
you.
having it. It's going back to do its job elsewhere.
Okay, lovely. So does it go on tour in different galleries around the country then?
The Terence Higgins quilt, this is the first time it's been seen in public. So it's its first public display in a public museum. And the role of the quilt is to talk to people about HIV prevention going forward. So we were very lucky to have it for a short amount of time, and then Terence Higgins Trust are taking it off to other events in London. The larger quilt with the kind of 40 panels, comes in and out of different exhibitions and is shown on different occasions to start these conversations. So both of them are very kind of quite different to how we normally work, because they're kind of active objects that are there to be discussed, which is a really interesting way of working for us, because usually we work with kind of 17th century drawings.
Okay, lovely. Thank you. And Winnie, before we speak more about the event that you'll be speaking at, I just wondered how does an exhibition such as this one impact your work on a daily basis?
I mean, I was listening to Ashley speaking about the quilt, and especially the Terence Higgins Trust quilt or panel. I mean, that's really important, because the Terence Higgins Trust is the biggest organization in the UK in terms of HIV, and so it is a huge legacy. In terms of Terence Higgins, himself, and they've done a lot of great work in terms of supporting people living with HIV, especially marginalized communities. So it's really important. I collaborate a lot with the Terence Higgins Trust. I've even been, sat on the board of advisory committees in different respects. So it's really important to be able to have that as a conversation piece, because we need to use all sorts of different strategies to talk about HIV, especially in the lead up to 2030, where we want to end HIV. But I also want to touch on the other information you talked about, actually. You talked about a local a local connection in terms of what you're exhibiting at the museum. I was actually born in Sheffield, but don't ask me where. But because I didn't grow up there, I really need to find my roots. But this is important for me to be able to speak to an audience in a place where I was actually born. So it's a good connection too.
Lovely, that's really lovely, which leads on to a very important discussion then for you, actually. So Winnie is coming back to her city of birth to be a part of a panel. Tell us more about that particular panel. Who should we expect, and how can people access the information on this?
So all the information can be found on Sheffield Museum's website, or the Festival of Debate website, which can both be Googled. And really, we're very lucky to have kind of a broad panel with some real experts on. So Winnie is speaking. So we have an activist, Dr. Claire Doosnap will be speaking, who's the former president of the British Association of HIV and Sexual Health. The chief executive of the Terence Higgins Trust, Richard Angel, will be talking. Greg Fell, the president of the Association of Directors of Public Health, and Becky, who's also a woman living with HIV, who's a activist from Sheffield. I think it's really exciting for us, because I'm an art historian. Usually, when we put events on, we're trying to communicate the history of art to our audiences, and we'll have kind of important speakers come from the history of art. And it's really interesting to have people from the top of their fields in healthcare talking about these art exhibitions and making those links in. a context such as the Festival Debate, which is known for having these really kind of forward-looking, important discussions. So it's really exciting for us to have not only kind of doctors talking about the art, but also like important doctors who are experts in their field.
Absolutely. I actually hear you. I have to say, I took a big interest in this event because during my undergraduate studies, I was looking at social aspects of HIV/AIDS and the impact on girl children in Southern Africa. And so I've also kind of interacted with Terence Higgins Trust, Winnie, and I know the amazing work that they do, especially for the African community here in the United Kingdom. I wondered what sort of traffic you've had at the gallery, actually, from the African community that is equally impacted as the European community, the British community that's here in Sheffield.
I don't think I'd be able to break it out down by community. I'm not going to collect numbers in that way, but to give you an example, the gallery has around 700,000 visitors a year.
Right.
And we specifically put the Terence Higgins Trust in a non-gallery space. So it's in our kind of avenue where everyone walks through to the shop so that more people will see it, because often the doorways to the galleries can be barriers. So we specifically put it in a space which is more a kind of a movement space so that as many people as possible will interact with it. And it's just been great because every time I go, I see people standing, taking pictures of it and reading the information. I was talking to someone the other day who actually made part of it, which we didn't know, who was also from Sheffield. And then we have a community curator here. We have connections who work with different communities. So I know I work with an academic who works with Sadaka, and he's been feeding information out to those communities. So hopefully it's having an effect. But I think it was also important for us to show the work alongside the rest of the art exhibitions. You have this mix of these kind of like, Victorian drawings alongside this quilt, which talks about something which is relevant today without shame or stigma. And they're both seen as kind of important art objects, also alongside being important social objects. It was really, key for us to mix those things up and have these discussions.
That's absolutely important. Thank you for that. And Winnie, I'm just thinking about that aspect of mixing that exhibition or by having that exhibition alongside other exhibitions that aren't necessarily about HIV/AIDS. And to me, that speaks a little bit to destigmatization. Could you speak a little bit to the aspect of stigma and how it's affected the community in general, not just people living with it, but also people affected by it in one way or the other?
I like the idea of putting anything around HIV in places where those kinds of things interact with things that might not be related to HIV, because that's the kind of road we need to take at this particular point. HIV can't not be looked at as, something that's separate from people's lives. It's part of, a lot of people's lives. And we are going to get more people interacting and knowing about HIV if it's in a space where it's not it's usually not, sort of, a space where it should be. At the moment, the people we need to know a lot more about HIV are those people who never interacted with it, so we can get them to understand why it's really important for us to end HIV by 2030. A lot of people don't know enough. Many people's ideas and information are stuck in the 1980s. And so those are the attitudes and impacts that affect people living with HIV, but also affect people, well, maybe not affect them, but stop them from coming forward to get tested, for HIV, because they don't understand or have not updated their information in regards to where we are at with HIV. Where we are at with HIV is that if somebody living with HIV is on treatment and has been on treatment for a long time, they can pass on HIV. And everybody in the world should know that at this particular point. But there are so many people who do not know that. So people are living very productive lives, you know, with HIV. And the people that are actually stuck and are holding us back are the people who either haven't engaged with the issue or are afraid of engaging with the issue, people who haven't never taken an HIV test, people who don't want to know about HIV for all sorts of reasons. But those of us who are in care or who are living well with the chronic illness are living well with it. So it's the people who are not informed that are keeping us from actually living our full lives and from actually, you know, possibly not getting to that target that we need to get to. So we need to get everybody on board, especially with information. We really do need to do that.
Lovely, thank you. I think I'm gonna let Ashley just say one more thing and then you can say bye to us and re-invite us to that event, then I'll continue speaking to Winnie.
So two things maybe. I just want to go over the exhibition a little bit, which will be on beyond while the talk is on. So basically, the exhibition takes as its basis this idea from John Ruskin, who set up the collection, that making things with your hands was good for society and good for your mental health and good for the health of society. So alongside the HIV works, we're also showing works from charities that do work in prisons. We're showing suicide prevention quilts made by parents who've lost their children to suicide. We're showing combat stress who work with soldiers who have post-traumatic stress disorder, and colleges who work with schools with special educational needs. So we're going out and looking at lots of different crafts that attempt to have a kind of moral outcome, which is really exciting. But to pick up on what Winnie was saying, I think the thing that's been really interesting for me actually is that I give a lot of tours in the galleries, and sometimes our audiences are not those audiences who interact with HIV prevention or don't have those that information. And being able to stand up and talk about being able to live with HIV if you're on preventative care, and talking about shame and stigma in front of them, is really interesting because it's never a conversation we have in the art gallery, and it's certainly not conversations those audiences are having at home, I don't think. So it is reaching new people. I think the thing that a positive I think I've taken from it is the AIDS Panel 21. We were told that when it was shown recently, some of the names were covered up by the family because they were still ashamed of the HIV stigma. And for my generation, I didn't recognize that at all. And it really hit me. And actually, when I talk to audiences, I tell them that you can see that they're kind of disgusted by that as well, which I think is really, really positive to know that even people who don't interact are still against the idea of the stigma around it, which is fun. I think it's great, a great move forward, basically.
I've just realized one thing we haven't because only because we haven't spoken about the book Winnie co-authored, but is the book going to be available on the day, Winnie?
I will bring a copy, with me, but the book is available on Amazon. It's also available at Waterstones online. It's also in America available in, online at Barnes and Noble. So it's available on different platforms,
So
but
don't
I'll
need
have
to
a
carry
copy.
it to the gallery then. Okay. Well, Ashley, thank you so much. And we look forward to the event on the 18th of April. How can we end HIV by 2030? Yep, that is correct. Lovely. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Yes, bye.
And Winnie, I am really interested, and I think many people will be interested in coming along to listen to you. But could you share a little bit about your personal journey then with HIV and what led you to become an activist and a co-author?
Okay, since it's been a journey of almost, 4 decades. Of living with HIV, I'll try and be brief, because we might be here all day if I decided to go into every detail. Plus, people can read about my journey in our stories told by us if they can access it. We do have a website. It's just the whole name of our stories told by us, info.com. So that website is available for people to go and see who else's stories are in the book. But my HIV journey started when I was diagnosed. And it wasn't that I went for a test. I was diagnosed through an unpaid internship while I was studying in North America. I had to do this test because of what was going to be involved in the work that I was doing. So it came as a shock. I was in my late 20s, you know, looking ahead, you know, at my life and, you know, with all sorts of different prospects. And I wasn't thinking about HIV at all. So when the results came back, it was shocking. And I had to sit back and think about what that meant in terms of my life, because at that point, there was no effective HIV treatment. And so there was no living with HIV. There was only dying with HIV. And so I don't know how many people have been told, you know, you won't live for another 3 months or a year. It's quite a shock to your system because you don't know how to prepare for it. I didn't tell anyone about my status, and that was quite isolating, actually.
I can imagine, yeah.
It was quite isolating. It was very stressful because I couldn't share it because of the stigma. I would sit in conversations where people would say, oh, if I knew anybody who was living with HIV, I wouldn't sit near them, I wouldn't eat with them. I would, and I was sitting right in the middle of these conversations, but they didn't know it.
Yeah.
So it was difficult.
And what year is this, Winnie? What year is this?
This was in 1988.
So definitely at the height of misinformation, lack of knowledge, yeah.
Exactly. And there was a lack of knowledge about a lot of different things. There was a lack of knowledge because it was North America. There was a lack of knowledge that women can also be diagnosed with HIV because the majority of the people who everybody knew about were men, you know, having sex with men. So there were a lot of different things. It wasn't until maybe 6 years on and I had moved to Africa, to Uganda, where I'm originally from. Well, that's my ancestral home. And I got TB, I got pneumonia, and I nearly died, basically. But I got, you know, TB and pneumonia treated. Mostly because I understood what was going on in my body. I was
and at that point, were you still not able to talk to your family or friends, loved ones? Were you still dealing with it on your own?
Well, at that time, half of my family were no longer alive. My parents were both gone. I had had lost a friend, a brother to HIV. But, you know, I had one sibling who knew about my HIV status, who was supporting me, my only biological sister. And she was supporting me. She was, you know, helping me to access the best care that I could. And she had taken the news of my being HIV positive more, you know, embraced the news more positively than I ever thought she would have.
I have to say, when you say that, there's something that always comes to mind when I think about HIV AIDS on the continent of Africa, especially sub-Saharan Africa. I always remember that Uganda was a trailblazer in actually destigmatizing, I think, and also treating HIV AIDS. So I'm wondering whether that also speaks to how your sister's attitude was, because there was more learning at the time as well.
I think there was more awareness. You know, in Uganda at the time, there were a lot of different awareness campaigns. People, you know, there were a lot of people living with HIV who were also visible, and people they knew about it. So that really helped. That helped. But still, I wasn't about to talk to everyone about my HIV status. So most of the people I talked to were healthcare experts, doctors. And while I was in Uganda, the doctors were actually, that I talked to anyway, were very surprised at how open I was, you know, about my HIV status, to them anyway. And so they were willing to learn a lot, and they were asking me a lot of questions and all of that. So it was really important for me to be able to talk to them, and for, you know, and for me to learn from them, because I was interested in learning what was happening with my body. But, you know, I got the TB and pneumonia, which are the most challenging opportunistic infections that affect people living with HIV. Somehow I survived. But, you know, it was a period of about 2 years that I was in Uganda, and it was, you know, trying to be able to deal with these opportunistic infections. In 1996, I think, I ended up in the UK, and I was in the UK to visit a brother who was, you know, living in the UK at that time. And I was with, you know, my nieces, my nephews. We were just, you know, in the UK for a few weeks, you know, just to, even for me to recover, basically, from 2 years of really not
of
being.
Illness, yeah.
But I took advantage of the fact that, you know, I'm a British citizen, and I went to the hospital to find out, you know, what, you know, my situation was, with the, you know, with the idea in mind that I was going to go back, at least knowing where I stood. And of course, at that particular point, you know, there was the HIV treatment, the effective treatment, the triple combination therapy, which I did, which I had heard of, but I didn't know enough about. I was preparing to die when I was in Uganda, basically. I wasn't preparing to live, because I knew there was no option for me. So when I got to the hospital, the doctor, you know, asked me a few questions, where I'd been, and they told me that, you know, my body was in such bad shape at that particular time, and I had AIDS at that
It had advanced to AIDS then.
Yeah, I had, you know, not just, I wasn't just HIV positive, I had AIDS.
You're ill,
yeah. And anything could, if I caught anything at that particular point, it could possibly kill me, because my immune system was at its, you know, worst. So I didn't really, you know, I thought, well, at least I know where I stand, you know, I'm going to die any time. But through some sort of fluke, I ended up at a, you know, at a support group, an HIV support group, with somebody I didn't know, somebody I'd just met in the UK, who said that they would go to this place and talk about all sorts of things. So I ended up there, and what was happening at the group was there were a lot of people living with HIV there. It was an HIV support group. I'd never been to an HIV support group in my life. And there were lots of kids. There were so many women. And because the HIV effective treatment had just, you know, well, for about maybe 2 or 3 years, it was starting to kick in. There were a lot of women, and especially African women, really talking about how unwell they had been, and then when they started treatment, they really became well, and they are able to do everything that they wanted to do, and were getting with their life. So I had testimonies, not just one, not
but
two,
multiple, and people who were like you, of African descent as well, not just men who had sex with men that were Western. So that was very useful, it sounds like.
It was transformational, I can say that. Because through going to that support group, I then went back to the hospital, and I told the doctor that I'd like to start on medication, if
Yeah.
that's good. And after starting on medication, I continued to access the support group, shared my story, and then started learning about HIV treatment, how it works in the body, the names, and all sorts of things. And I've never looked back. And have been an act, that's where my activism actually started.
And how we haven't talked much about the book, but maybe this is a good place to segue into the book as well. So, did you meet your co-authors in similar settings? So tell us the journey about the story about the book, how you arrived at it.
Yeah, actually, the book, with my co-authors, four of them, they're all from different African countries. So we met in the HIV sector through interacting in the support groups.
Okay.
And we interacted with various support groups because there were quite a lot of support groups at that time. And then we identified each other through that. We became sort of friends. And then we decided, oh, we needed something more than the support group, something more intimate, something more than just talking about our HIV journeys, perhaps life, work, something. So we formed a group of five, women
Yeah.
who talk about all sorts of different things, including work and all. And so it started there. So the friendship has been going for more than 15 years. And we've been doing different things, but our story is told by us, the book that was published, we self-published, and
Okay.
we published last year in May, so it's going to be a year next month since the book was published. It was an idea that came up when we heard about the 40 years since HIV was identified in the UK.
Right.
We sat back and thought, okay, if it's 40 years since HIV was identified in the UK, what have African communities contributed within that? There have been a lot of organizations, we've been very active, but there's nothing. There is nothing to say that this is what African communities did. We thought that this was, a point where we could do something because we've been around, we've made an impact, So we decided, to say that let's feature people's personal stories and then tell the African contribution to the UK response through those personal stories. Not just of people living with HIV, not just African people living with HIV, but also our allies from the LGBTI community, health personnel, people who have interacted. So there, we went in with the intention of doing 40 stories of different people. And we got these names through our networks, through our own personal and professional networks, and contacted them. But there are also a lot of important people in there, who are, in the book telling about, what they experienced, especially in the African community. The focus is the African communities. And it is the first book of its kind to focus on HIV communities where HIV is concerned, and to focus on the contribution and the resilience of African communities, not the negative aspects, and as many books usually do.
As many books usually do. And I think the book itself does sound transformative, and I would definitely be getting myself a copy. So in case you're just joining us, we're speaking to Winnie Siruma, who will be in Sheffield on the 18th of April for the Festival of Debate event, How Do We End New Cases of HIV by 2030? Winnie is an author, an activist, and all around motivating woman, I think I'm finding as I'm talking to Winnie. Well, how has it been? When you were talking about the impact of the African community, I think the implication as well in that for me was that in some ways when there've been trials, we've probably been amongst that population group that has that. There are also other things, but the visibility has just not been there. And why is that important for the African community?
It's really important, you know, to make sure that we are visible, because we've been here for a long time, you know, yeah, as African communities. And, you know, while we have a lot of different challenges, there are a lot of different things that we've done, that we are very good at, that we've, you know, accomplished, you know, and we rarely talk about that, you know, and it is up to us as Africans to actually talk about these things. We can't expect...
Nobody's doing it for us. We have to do it for ourselves, right? That's true.
And no one is out there thinking, oh, I should write about these important Africans or these good things. We need to do it ourselves. So there are a lot of, you know, unheard voices, but there are a lot of also people who don't see themselves in a good light because of all this negative stuff that has impacted on their lives.
Yeah.
You know, and that sort of negativity can have, you know, a terrible impact on people's lives. Because it's not just HIV we are talking about here, if we are talking about stigma. There are layers yeah, around racism, layers yeah, around the hostile
environment yeah,
around immigration, layers of all sorts of different things that people might, you know, there are lots of different issues. So it is really important for our voices to be heard. And I know yeah, that when people hear about HIV, probably mm-hmm, their minds go to, that's probably the worst thing that can happen to somebody. Well, I'm here to say that you can turn a negative into something really, really purposeful and mm-hmm, something that can, you know, actually impact your life in a good way. Many of us living with HIV didn't know, especially those of us who were diagnosed before treatment, didn't know we would live.
No.
To this day, you know, to this day, we didn't know. So we lived on hope. We lived on action. We had to fight for our lives, literally fight for yeah, our lives. And we are here to tell you that we are leading productive lives. If you are in treatment, if you are in care, if you can access peer support, you can get your life back.
Lovely. That's very important, actually, to note. And I think that also speaks to, I was reading recently about how people on treatment are living just as long lives as any person who isn't on treatment, and that there have been so many advances depending on your, is it viral load? Yeah, I think it's viral load. You wouldn't necessarily be transmissible, or I've been learning things around that, but maybe you could clarify a bit more. I might be speaking out of turn.
No, you're on the right track, and it is important for people to educate themselves, you know, around HIV, and, you know, and how the treatment works. Mm-hmm. So the most important thing at the moment, especially, you know, when we are talking about ending HIV, it's when people test HIV positive, they get referred to treatment right away nowadays.
You know,
no waiting, there's nothing.
Okay.
If you test HIV positive at a clinic, they send you to a clinic where you can get HIV treatment.
Right.
And the point is that the faster that HIV is suppressed, okay,
mm-hmm,
the faster people get well,
mm-hmm,
And the faster that people get to that point where they can't transmit HIV.
Right.
So usually, this is, in theory, this is how it should work. The treatment, once you start it and take it properly, within 6 months, your HIV in your body will be suppressed enough not to be detectable. That doesn't mean that it's not there. It's there, but it's not in enough, you know, enough to be transmitted.
All right.
Yeah. There is, you know, once you are undetectable, because the HIV is now very low in your body, it can't be transmitted, then even if you have sexual intercourse without a condom with somebody without HIV, you cannot transmit HIV.
Right.
That is scientific. It is information that has been proven for years.
Right.
And nobody should be questioning it, but there are a lot of people questioning it.
That's very powerful for people to learn. So there are two questions I'm trying to ask you at the same time because they're related to that. So maybe you could choose how you respond to them. Yeah. So for marginalized community and communities here in the UK, and I'm thinking more specifically, I think, for African younger people, how do you engage them and pass this knowledge on to them? Then the second question is, can you talk a bit about PrEP as well in that context?
Okay. So I don't know if you know this, but the majority of children who are born in this country with HIV are Africans.
No, I do not. No.
But so there are many children who were born with HIV and have never known anything before HIV because they were born with it.
Yeah.
So there's that group of children. And of course, many of them are now grown up. Some are in their 30s, actually, and living full lives. But they are unable to talk about their HIV, especially in schools, because of, you know, rules that schools have in place, or because of the stigma attached to HIV still that may not allow them to be in school once parents know, you know. Some parents, you know, would probably think, I don't want my child, you know, with somebody living with HIV in the school. That has happened before. So there are all of these different issues. Where young people are concerned, the issue around HIV and talking about HIV should begin within families. Okay? That issue, because children trust their parents more than anybody else. And that's where that information should come from first. First and foremost. Unfortunately, within African communities, a lot of those conversations are not happening. And even with the children who are living with HIV, some of them have found out from different places that they're living with HIV and not from their parents.
Right.
And that creates a whole, you know, other challenges.
Absolutely,
Some parents think they are protecting their children by not telling them, you know. Other parents are just scared and don't know when to tell them. But it is important to be honest with that child. Because if they find that you're dishonest, that trust will be very difficult to build going forward. So children should be taught in the language that they can understand, you know, depending on when a parent wants to tell them. You know, because it's up to the parents. You can't leave that job to somebody else, you know, to do
right.
it. But in terms of interacting with young people in general, you know, to tell them about, well, first of all, we need to find out how best young people receive information, you know, this particular time. And target those effective ways of getting information to them.
Yeah.
And many of them will not know about stuff that happened many, many years ago around no treatment. Anybody who was born in the last 40 years will probably think, no, they don't know about that because, they've had treatment all their lives. So it is really important to talk to young people in the language that they understand, in small doses, in relation to other things, but to also make sure that to tell people that HIV is no longer a death sentence. People live with HIV very well,
And to your point as well, that you mentioned earlier, the earlier you get the treatment, the sooner the virus is going to be suppressed as well. So it's only in everybody's interest, really, when you think about it, isn't it?
exactly, because once people are HIV positive, you want to start treatment. And there are a lot of different issues around treatment in terms of side effects, in terms of so different things. But there are so many different combinations of treatment that people can access, that could be good for them. But unless you have all of this information, unless you've been able to access a peer support group, unless you've been able to maybe go on websites where you can get this sort of information, you are in the dark. And a lot of people, the fear, the stigma, and all of those things stop them from actually getting the best care that there is to access in this country. I can speak to the fact that I get the absolute best care on the NHS. And I would love for everybody to be able
Absolutely.
to access this care. And it is there. You just have to be brave. You have to advocate for yourself, but you have to get the support to do this.
What you've just said there has reminded me what it is you're coming to do in Sheffield. So we're talking about how do we end new cases of HIV by 2030. I'm thinking that those are some of the ingredients, but what other thoughts do you have around how that can be achieved? And again, I would really like to, with a personal bias, focus a bit more on the African community, but of course, the UK is a very broad country. But I just wondered if you could speak more to that as well, and then we could say bye to our listeners.
Okay. Well, I mean, the thing is that I'm also, I've also been doing a lot of work within the African communities, and that's a huge interest to me. But I think one of the things that we need to understand is that whatever we did in the past to raise awareness, to do different things are going to be different now because we are in a different time. At this particular time, so what we need to figure out, especially within African communities, is, what are the specific needs of this community? Because what we haven't done before is, look at everybody or different communities and say, what do they need? What do they need? But we need to look at what do African communities need. They
Because there are
need,
nuances there,
yes,
yeah.
there are nuances. Even within the African communities, there are nuances within
Further
the community,
nuances, yes,
and
absolutely.
see how we deal with those things. But there are scarce resources at the moment. So we have to figure out, is it digital technology so that people can be, connected and can have the information readily on their phones, or the media, like you are doing? Is it a weekly program that you guys can help with, and we can talk about HIV in relation to other issues, not just HIV? So we have to, partner to do a lot of different partnerships because there are scarce society, resources. We have to be able to, as activists, and that's me, to be able to talk to people that life can go on in the way that you want it, but you have to be honest with yourself. You have to look after yourself. You have to be brave and say, I need to get an HIV test. I need to find out where I stand. And if the test is HIV, you know, is positive, then how do I go about this? The support is there, you know. But we can't have people who've never tested for HIV ever in our communities. If you've never tested for HIV before, that's criminal. How? You know, because you can test, you know, so many different ways to get tested. We need to be able to be engaged in our communities, not just on HIV, on a lot of different things.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that's why we had, you know, a lot of, for instance, like COVID deniers, you know, when COVID was around. We need to train people in our communities, train people to get this health information to the communities. And this has to be one of the sustainable ways we can get this information to them, not just around HIV, but around issues that impact on our communities, you know, sickle cell, you know, all sorts of different blood pressure, you know, and talk about those issues. We can have people with lived experiences alongside health professionals to talk about these different aspects of things.
And then we grow the body of knowledge as well that gets us to a place where we, in the single issue of HIV/AIDS, we're looking at ending new cases by 2030.
Exactly. But it's about, first of all, getting information, you know, making sure you have the most up-to-date information, testing, talking about HIV within families, within people will be actually very surprised if they start talking about HIV, because there are people in families who cannot talk about their HIV status, but are living in isolation and fear within families because nobody talks about it. And if they do, perhaps they talk about it in a negative way. So that's really critical. But also when people start treatment, you know, we must make sure people stay in treatment, you know, that they are retained in treatment, but also improving the quality of lives of people living with HIV, you know, to get the best quality of care all around, because there are all sorts of different issues. As we get older, as people living with their HIV, there are all sorts of issues that are creeping up, you know, that we are at a disadvantage with. But everything can be sorted out. And people can live productive lives, lives they want. And that's what we need to leave people with.
That's very powerful, Winnie. And before I let you go, just let people know again where they can find your book. And you've also got a website, I believe, that's dedicated to your stories.
Yes. So the book is called Our Stories Told by Us. It's written, you know, by 5 co-authors. And you can find it on our website, which is just that name, Our Stories Told by Us, with words all together, .com. And then you can also buy the book on Amazon and on Waterstones online. But also, if you're outside of the UK, you can, and in the US, you can find it on the Barnes & Noble website.
Winnie, we're looking forward to having you in Sheffield. Thank you so much for joining us on African Voices platform, and we can't wait to talk to you again.
Thank you. I look forward to coming to Sheffield, my birthplace.
Yes, welcome back home. We'll welcome you. I'm glad we're rolling out the red carpet. So that's Winnie Saruma, HIV activist, author, and a person living with HIV that will be coming to the festival debate event. How do we end new cases of HIV by 2030? Thank you so much for joining us.
time don't come, my people. Now you ready to rise?
To be free. To wise. To be free. Now you ready to rise?
I say we need to